Happy Friday, everybody. My name is Mike Cutler. I'd like to welcome all of you to the Michael Cutler Hour. It's my show, and those of you familiar with me know that I'm a retired INS senior special agent, and ever since the terrorist attacks of 9/11, I've decided to provide my perspectives to the discussions about national security and the perspectives that I've acquired in 30 years working for the old Immigration and Naturalization Service, because immigration, as I like to point out, folks, is not a single issue, but a singular issue that impacts virtually every challenge and threat that our nation faces today. And we are getting hammered from so many directions. For those of you who may have been reading what I've recently posted, we know that there are threats posed by sleeper agents in the United States. This is according to this administration, the Obama administration. And for years, we have seen all sorts of testimony on Capitol Hill from Robert Mueller, the head of the FBI. I've testified before Congress about my concerns about sleeper agents, and yet we've done nothing about it. We have a secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, who insists that our borders are secure. And the question that we need to ask is, well, how secure is secure enough? When we have millions of people living in our country and we have no idea as to their true identities, their nationalities, their backgrounds, their potential affiliation with criminal or terrorist organizations, then we have a problem. And it's a problem that involves everything from national security and criminal justice to community safety and a whole bunch of other issues that the immigration laws are supposed to protect America and Americans from. And what is so remarkable is that over the past decade or longer, there have been advocates for open borders, and I've come to call them the immigration anarchists, who like to make the allegation that if you want secure borders, if you want the immigration laws enforced, then you must be a racist, you must be motivated by hate. Nothing could be further from the truth. The idea of enforcing the immigration laws is American as apple pie. The whole point to those immigration laws is to prevent the entry of foreign nationals into our country whose presence would pose a threat to our safety, security, and well-being. And that's the reason for those immigration laws. And virtually every other country on the face of the earth has similar laws. Mexico certainly has similar laws. There isn't a country that you could name that doesn't take its borders seriously other than the United States of America. So with that in mind, understand how not having a secure border, how having millions of people in our country with no way of knowing who they are, threatens each and every one of us. This isn't about xenophobia, it's about common sense. You don't need to be antisocial to have a lock on your front door and a peephole and a doorbell. That's how just about every home comes equipped, so that the residents who live in that apartment, who live in that house, can make a conscious, willful decision as to whether or not to permit a stranger entry into their home. And that's the purpose of the immigration laws and those who enforce those laws, to make certain that we don't permit people into our country whose presence here would pose a threat to our well-being, to our safety. We don't want to lose our jobs or our lives to people who shouldn't be here. Simple concept. And America is anything but a white bread country. America is as diverse a country ethnically and racially as any country you are likely to find. I live in arguably the most diverse city in the world, New York City. So the allegations that you have to be racist to want to have immigration laws enforced is nuts. What's even crazier is that there are people who will buy into those ridiculous arguments. The immigration laws, let me be clear about this, do not differentiate by race, by religion, or by ethnicity. It is simply a matter of having laws that are supposed to keep out people with aliens who have dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer mental illness and are prone to violence, convicted felons, aliens involved with human trafficking, drug smuggling, violent crimes, money laundering, war crimes, terrorism, the list goes on. It's common sense. It's common sense, especially in this era, when we have such concerns about more and more members of violent transnational gangs entering our country and setting up shop from coast to coast and border to border. It's common sense when we have lost almost every expectation of privacy and freedom that the Fourth Amendment of our Constitution is supposed to guarantee, all in the name of national security, but our nation is not secure. So what is it exactly that we are getting from our own government? Certainly, the concept that the immigration laws that are supposed to protect America and Americans have gone out the window. Doris Meisner was the commissioner of the INS when I worked for the old INS. She used to tell us that we needed, as employees of the INS, to be customer-oriented. And you know what? I disagreed with Doris Meisner on so many issues, but not about that one. Where she and I parted company, however, was over who the customer is. Doris Meisner, the commissioner of the INS, seemed to have this notion that the customers of the Immigration Service were the illegal aliens. My belief is that the customers are the citizens of the United States. The immigration laws used to, in fact, be enforced and administered by the Labor Department prior to the Second World War, because the concern was that if you flooded the job market with lots of foreign workers, you would displace American workers and you would drive down wages and worsen the working condition of those American workers. What built America wasn't just a massive influx of immigrants. You know, we keep on hearing we're a nation of immigrants, we're a nation of immigrants. Just about every country on the planet has had people come to that country, whichever one you want to point to, from someplace else. What made America America wasn't simply having lots of people come here from lots of different places. What made America America, what created the American dream, was the middle class. The fact that by coming to America and acquiring an education, acquiring a trade, acquiring a necessary skill, you could earn more money and bootstrap your way into success, into mainstream economic America. For generations, it was seen as our birthright that anyone born in America would do better than their parents who came from someplace else, and that successive generations would continue to do better yet. That's the American dream. That's what made America the envy of the world. We are now witnessing the dismantling of America's middle class. And this is the way it's being done. We're being told that if we don't bring in the foreign workers at the bottom rung, then nobody will do those jobs. That's a lot of bunk. My dad was a construction worker. He was a plumber. He died when I was in college, but he remains to this day my biggest hero. He and his buddies in the construction trades went out there and embodied the can-do spirit that built this country. And you know what, folks? They're still out there. Look at the guys building the World Trade Center at Ground Zero. Look at construction workers in your own hometown. They will go out there in lousy weather, whether it's very hot or very cold, doesn't matter. These guys are out there busting their rear ends to build those houses, build those office buildings, build those roadways. No challenge is too great. This is the can-do spirit of America, and they're there. Right now, there are American coal mines toiling away in those coal mines. We have Americans working in the steel foundries and doing all kinds of tough, dangerous, filthy, backbreaking work. The only issue for them is they want to earn a living wage so at the end of the week they can pay their bills and support their families. That's all it's about. So when people say, well, the illegals do the work Americans won't do, they are leaving out the tagline. They're doing the work Americans won't do for substandard wages and under conditions that are so dangerous as to be illegal. And when people vilify those of us who say, let's enforce the laws, we need to ask them, do you really hate your fellow Americans that much that you want to see all of these Americans who've lost their homes to foreclosure and more Americans enter the poverty class, if you want to call it that? Is this what you want for our country? Now, this evening, we're going to be speaking with a friend, someone that I've known for about a year and a half, 2 years now. Her name is Julie Poner. She'll be calling in shortly. Julie's background is that she married a soccer player from the Czech Republic, and she filed for him to get residency, and the marriage didn't work out. When she wanted out, he realized that the only way to get his green card was to accuse her of spousal abuse. Because believe it or not, there is a law in the books that now says that if an alien is abused by a spouse, verbally, physically, whatever, they can then file for their own green card, crazy as that might sound. Now, that doesn't mean that I favor a spouse being abused by their husband or wife. Absolutely not. I want to be very clear about my position. But the whole point for our government giving a green card, placing an alien on a pathway to citizenship when they marry an American citizen or a resident alien, is not for the benefit of the alien, but for the benefit of the American citizen. This goes back to that concept of who the customer is. Is the customer the illegal alien, or is the customer the citizen of the United States? So here is this woman, American citizen, gets married and realizes that she made a mistake. People get divorced every day of the week. She wound up, as you will hear her story, I'll let her tell the story rather than myself, but just so you have an idea, finds herself accused of spousal abuse and underwent a trauma that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. Because we have this mistaken notion today in America that the immigration laws are all about the illegal aliens. We have forgotten that the purpose for the immigration laws is to protect our citizens, to protect our nation. And that has to be reversed. The only way it can be reversed, though, folks, is for you to be involved. That's the issue. You know, when I write my commentaries, I always like to make the statement that democracy is not a spectator sport. Well, it's a nice, catchy phrase, but what does it really mean? It means that, first of all, we need to educate ourselves. We need to understand the issues. Because if you look at most politicians, these people are magicians. They are illusionists. They want you to think that they're doing something that they're really not doing. That's how magicians make buildings disappear. That's how they cut the lady in half, you know, all those tricks that they do. It's all about misdirecting your attention. It's all about creating illusions. I really think that the ideal candidate would probably be David Copperfield, because then at least we would have a professional illusionist in the Oval Office, because that's all that we've been getting. We get promises that our borders are secure, but we know that they're not secure. We know that our borders represent little more than speed bumps to those who would smuggle aliens or drugs into our country. So how is it that Janet Napolitano, the head of DHS, an agency that I've come to refer to as the Department of Homeland Surrender, can go before the cameras and say the borders have never been more secure? She can do that because that's the jingle that she is expected to sing when she's in front of the cameras. It's the cost of having her job. Michael Chertoff worked for President George W. Bush. And Mike Chertoff, I got news for you. Same deal. It's always about telling us what they think we want to hear while they make certain that the situation doesn't reflect what we want to see happen. This is how we wound up with unknown millions of illegal aliens in the country, because the politicians from both sides of the aisle did the math, and they realized that there was a big gain for them to bring in lots of illegal aliens, or at least not block the influx of massive numbers of illegal aliens, and they used every excuse imaginable. When Hurricane Katrina hit, George W. Bush said, hey, we can suspend the use of I-9s. We don't have to worry if we're hiring illegal aliens. That's just fine. We need people to come to America to build that city that was ravaged by the hurricane. We'll stop and think about it. That was a golden opportunity to turn lemons into lemonade. If George Bush had said, let's go out and recruit people who are unemployed, maybe they've had minor scrapes with the law, let's go throughout the United States and find those young people and teach them the trades of the construction business, so they can go to New Orleans and rebuild those cities that were ravaged. We could tell them, listen, you help us rebuild New Orleans and we'll help you rebuild your lives. Great opportunity, don't you think? So instead, we had a massive influx of illegal aliens that came from Mexico primarily and went to work in New Orleans. Because every excuse imaginable becomes yet another excuse to ignore our nation's borders. It's mind-boggling. It makes no sense. It makes no sense that we have many high-tech workers unemployed in America or underemployed, and yet we keep hearing the same rhetoric, oh, we've got to import more foreign workers or America won't be competitive. America won't be competitive. Who went to the moon? Did we import lots of engineers and technicians to get America to the moon when John F. Kennedy, the president at the time, said that we would commit ourselves to sending men to the moon by the end of the decade and returning them safely to the earth? Or did we simply put out a call for American scientists, American engineers, and American technicians? And yes, I know there was some German scientist, Wernher von Braun, and his crowd from Peenemünde, who were captured in the closing days of the Second World War. But let's face it, the great majority of the engineers and scientists and technicians who made that incredible achievement possible were American scientists, engineers, and technicians. But today, when you listen to the politicians, it's as though we're either too lazy to do the hard work or too dumb to do the high-tech work. I see Julie is on the line, so let me bring her on, and I welcome Julie to the program.
Hi, Michael.
Julie Pona, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, thanks. How about you?
I am terrific. Happy Friday.
Yes, same to you.
Thank you so much for joining me on the program. Julie, I started out explaining to folks that you and I met about a year and a half, 2 years ago through Senator Grassley's office when he asked that I speak with you, or his people asked that I speak with you. And at the time, you had run into problems because you had married a guy who was a soccer player. And as sometimes happens in marriage, this wasn't working out. You decided you wanted out, and he had other plans because he apparently was desperate to get his green card. Is that the short version of it?
It was hockey, though, instead of soccer.
Okay, sorry about that.
No, that's okay. That's okay. And yes, you're right. We were married, and I entered into the marriage thinking that it was a good faith marriage. And he, however, had a different agenda.
And what wound up happening?
Well, it was a short-term marriage. We were married for about 3 years, and during the course of those 3 years, we moved several times around Europe and to the States and around the United States, and we finally settled in Massachusetts, and we applied for his green card. And it was then the INS, Mike, this was going back to 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And after applying for his green card, we received written notice of an impending interview. And it was just a few days after receiving that notice that he informed me that we would be getting a divorce now and that I would continue to sponsor him for his green card and file for the divorce, or he would take our then young children back to the Czech Republic and I would never see them again.
You had children with him, correct?
We had twins, right.
Mm-hmm.
And they were three at the time. And frankly, I looked behind me. I couldn't imagine that he was talking with me. There'd been no indication that that there was any problem. We just opened a business. We bought a home. And we were entrenched in what I thought was our life together and sharing common goals. So when he made this announcement, it was a surprise to me. And then he began living the what had been a secret life up to that point, living it kind of out loud, and became threatening and belligerent. And before too much longer, I found myself in the throes of a divorce and learning about immigration law and international child abduction.
Well, so where did things go from there besides downhill?
And they did go downhill, and they went downhill quickly. First thinking that we had a marriage worth salvaging, I thought that we should go to a marriage counselor. And then through that counselor who opened my eyes, it became apparent that that there was no marriage to salvage, regardless of the fact that we had children. And so I eventually, under pressure from him, I did file for the divorce without knowing at that time how important it was for him that I be the one to file. In other words, had he been the one to file for the divorce, he really would have sort of pulled the rug out from underneath his own feet in any kind of immigration process. But I had no knowledge of this, and I didn't know that the big take for him was his green card.
Mm-hmm.
So when it became unbearable and he was continuing to threaten to take the children, and there was the issue of just neglect and his physical handling of our children, I did file for a divorce. So I went into family court, I retained an attorney, and I started the divorce proceeding. And believe it or not, probably a few weeks after that, we received the second notice from, again, what was then INS, alerting us to some changes within the system that would delay our initial interview. So we went from an interview that was to have taken place just within a matter of a couple of weeks to now one that wouldn't take place for several months. And this made him agitated, I think, to say the least. And again, I still had no idea that this was important to him and that this was the reason for the marriage and now, you know, the push to have me file for the divorce. So during that period of time, then, we're really just dealing with a family court judge and family matters.
Mm-hmm.
And you still didn't
see the nexus between this and immigration at this point.
I saw no connection,
none
whatsoever, and knew nothing about immigration proceedings or nothing about family court proceedings either, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So my main concern at that time was the well-being of our children, and he had been really an absentee husband and father at best. Anyway, we'd moved 12 times in the 3 short years that we'd been married, between the Czech Republic and Germany and the United States. We moved around in the U.S., and we would move someplace, and then suddenly he would need to go back to where we'd lived prior to settle business. Or
did you ever find out why you were living such a nomadic existence?
I did not in real time, but I learned as I started to investigate what was going on. Our life was unraveling, and you know, it's funny, Mike, how things will happen, and for whatever reason, they register, and you file them away, and then they reappear down the road. You understand?
And now you have context. And now you suddenly have that epiphany of context.
Exactly. So your life starts to come together and sort of play out in your head. These slides come together and you see what had happened and now what continues to happen. And it does serve you as you travel on, because now you sort of you capture those in real time now and you apply them to what you learned.
What do you think was going on at that point?
Well, there was fraud involved. A little bit of it I knew, money movement, because once we moved to the States then, I became more hands-on with our finances and our business ventures. And when we were in Europe, they remained a mystery to me. And I think what's important to point out here is that Americans, having an American spouse can be invaluable to a foreign national, which is something else that I didn't know. So having an American spouse with him in Europe served a huge purpose for him in business dealings and money movement, and I was unaware of this. So once we moved to the States and I became more involved and more hands-on, I noticed that we were going through money at an alarming pace.
Mm-hmm.
And how he was able to garner loans, and I can look back now and speculate. But at the time, what was explained to me as a contract or some kind of player management all seemed to make sense. But it was, frankly, it was a facade. And so as he sort of blew through this money he was able to obtain, then he needed to move on. And so at one point then I realized that I served a monetary purpose for him, a green card purpose. I got him into the country. I secured some new banking and business relationships for him. And once he sort of expired had run through every asset with me, then it was time for him to move on so that he could continue.
Well, what a position to be in. So where do we go from here? So I know that he made all kinds of allegations ultimately against you, and where did that lead you?
Well, what happened when we were really at that time just dealing with a divorce petition and proceeding as we waited for the INS interview, which to me was a would be a non-event at that point. I didn't even consider it. However, he went into court, in the family court ex parte, and the judge, family court judge, ordered me to attend his immigration interview. And I complied. We were living separately. He moved out of our home.
Back up. This is amazing to me. You're in family court, and the judge in family court ordered you to attend the immigration hearing?
He did.
How? This is bizarre. This is where you have judges doing things from the bench that leave you scratching your head.
And that still remains a question that that I have to this day. It was always explained to me that family court judges have an awful lot of lateral movement. And it's true, they do. But, you know, it was also my understanding that ethically they are bound to err on the side of caution regarding children. And I found that not to be the case in my experience there.
So this judge wanted you to attend this hearing to make it appear as though all was right with the marriage?
Well, that I don't know. I don't know what his thinking was behind
the order.
Because
if that were the case, he would be suborning perjury, wouldn't he?
And, you know, there's a lot of debate there about, well, did he order you to attend, but did he tell you what to say or how to respond to the questions by the agents? And I guess I would have to say, no, that wasn't part of the order.
So then why did he tell you that you needed to attend this hearing at immigration?
Well, again, it was ex parte. So I was I had the order and I attended. And it was the immigration agents who were outraged. And that's when
because you told them that you had been ordered to attend. Is that correct?
Well, you know the process.
Yep,
we show
I sure
up
do.
At INS in Boston. Again, it was Immigration and Naturalization Service at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were living separately, so I arrived, and he arrived, and it was a big waiting room, Mike. So I took a seat, and he was savvy enough to know how important it was that he be sitting next to me, so that when the agent came out and called our name, it would appear as though we'd arrived together, and we were there together, and we were together. And so, for whatever reason, when he moved to sit beside me, it made me uncomfortable. I moved, and he moved with me again. We were called in. We sat down. The agent had our paperwork. She asked us our name. She asked for our addresses. He gave his. I gave mine. She looked up from her paperwork and asked why we were living separately. And I let him answer. And he said, we're divorcing. And she looked at me and asked me why I was there. I told her I'd been ordered to be there, and she asked by whom. And I told her the family court judge. And she asked if I had the order, which I did, and she asked to see it. She asked to see my husband's visa. She wanted to know how he was coming in and leaving the country. His visa was invalid. So they confiscated his passport. They escorted him out of the room. A second agent and a supervisor came in. And at this point, the only thing missing from the room was a single light bulb swinging from the ceiling and cinder block walls. These three agents quickly brought me up to speed on how I was in the driver's seat, how an American citizen cannot be ordered to attend an immigration interview,
mm-hmm.
and how I could actually face federal prosecution for marriage fraud if I were to continue to sponsor him for a green card.
Right.
And they went on to lay out my financial obligations and so forth and so on. At that time, Mike, I was only able to share with them so much. I only knew so much at that time, a little bit about money movement and about extramarital affairs. And they apologized to me and they said, we're so sorry to have to tell you this, but this is a case of marriage fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens all the time. Immigrants who marry, you know, unwitting Americans and it's really for the purpose of obtaining legal residency status, a green card, and then sometimes eventually citizenship.
Yep.
So they strongly encouraged me to withdraw my petition, and I did, thinking I was being compliant with our federal law, with my federal government, and understanding at that time that these agents knew much more about what was happening in my own life than I did.
Right.
And given the fact that he had not been a hands-on father, I really had no trouble complying with their strong recommendation. Again, we moved all over, you know, to what, two continents, three countries. He was gone much of the time. He would dump us. My children and I, there were times when we slept on a mattress on the floor with no electricity because he had to suddenly go back to the country we just moved
from. Well, so let's get beyond that, though. I understand you're in a tough spot. But ultimately, didn't he make allegations against you?
He did, and this is when we entered the immigration process.
What kind of allegations?
Abuse, spousal abuse, under the Violence Against Women Act.
First of all, I find it remarkable. It's violence against women. It should be violence against spouses if they're going to do this anyway. But here you're the woman, but you're the citizen, and you're the one that was being accused. So he claimed that you physically abused him.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is a professional. And this guy is a professional athlete.
He was a former professional athlete, 6'2", 200 plus pounds, in the process of.
And how tall are you?
I'm 5'2" on a great day.
Standing on tippy toes.
There you go.
I hope you went easy on him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first I got
goodness
on the
school, gracious.
Right? Yeah. Well, I think what's troubling here is that the federal government at that point, I was really removed from the picture. They did, however, allow me to stay in touch with them. I was put in touch with the trial attorneys who were prosecuting him for marriage fraud. It's out of my hands at this point. So facing deportation for marriage fraud, he self-petitioned as a battered and abused spouse under the Violence Against Women Act, and
that requires that he has to be able to have some kind of proof to substantiate that you were the one who had physically or mentally abused or attacked him, correct?
Well, eventually. At that point, though, what happens is that deportation hearing and proceeding came to a halt, and his paperwork went from immigration court to the Vermont Service Center that handles the Violence Against Women Act cases in immigration proceedings. So he went to an adjudication officer trained in spousal abuse, and now he, as you know, Mike, and you might even be able to explain it better than I can, there are two situations or two instances. So if an immigrant spouse finds him or herself a widow or a widower while going through the process, the American spouse dies, then that application will go to the Vermont Service Center.
Right.
It goes to, right, and the valid cases do as well.
Now, you know, the remarkable thing that everybody needs to understand, and I started to talk about this before you joined me on the air tonight, the whole concept behind giving the spouse of an American citizen or a resident alien residency is to unite the family for the best interest of the American citizen or the resident alien, okay? So that's the reason we do this. Now we have thrown this thing off into the twilight zone and saying, well, if you can show you were abused, we'll reward you with a green card.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a situation such as your husband was, where he wants to jettison his spouse but wants to get his green card, we've now given him a roadmap, haven't we? And the roadmap
mm-hmm.
says you have got to make an allegation against your spouse, and if you can get your spouse prosecuted for abuse, you're well on your way to success, and your spouse is probably well on the way to jail. Am I getting this wrong?
No, you're right.
I mean, we've incentivized fraud, and we've incentivized aliens who have nefarious intentions to lodge complaints against their spouses, and the person that now suffers ironically, is the American citizen petitioner who the law was supposed to be protecting initially.
Right.
Doesn't this kind of turn everything on its ear?
Well, it should. It should.
It blows my mind. And you know what you really have to wonder is, I'd love to know how many American citizens right now are sitting in jail because they were falsely accused of spousal abuse by an alien spouse who had ulterior motives. You know, I don't know if I told you, but perhaps I did. I assisted a criminal defense attorney in Florida a couple of years ago because this poor guy, a Vietnam War vet, a man in his 50s, meets this Russian lady. They get married, and she doesn't really want to live with him. He comes home from work. She's out partying. She comes in 2 o'clock in the morning, drunk, high, stoned, whatever. And he says, wait a minute, if you're my wife, we're not having dinner together. You don't want to go to bed with me. You don't want to live with me, but you want your green card. And either you live with me as a husband and wife situation, or I want out. Well, within a day or two, she calls the cops, alleges that he tried to attack her, shows a cut on her arm, which she might have inflicted with her long fingernails or maybe with a small knife, and says, my husband did it, has him locked up. And he's now looking at 20 years in jail, and the defense attorney knew about me because of my appearances on television, and I think he had read some of my congressional testimony. And, you know, I helped you prep for this hearing on VAWA, with the Violence Against Women's Act. So this attorney calls me up and says, can you help me? I said, yeah. Find out if the spouse filed for VAWA. Find out if someone else in that woman's family did the same thing so you can show knowledge and premeditation. Well, this young Russian lady, turns out, has a sister who did the exact same thing to somebody else. And as soon as they were confronted with this, and they were told that I was willing to come down to Florida to testify at trial, she suddenly withdrew her complaint of spousal abuse and said, you know what, I'm leaving the United States. I'm going to be on an airplane to Russia by the end of the week. Now, how crazy is that? Does that not parallel, you know, in bare minimums, the case that you ran into in your own personal life, this idea about the alien learning how to game the immigration system, which is not all that difficult, and mm-hmm. then the victim isn't the alien, but in fact the U.S. citizen.
Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate, and in my case and in cases like mine, the immigrant is so much savvier, not only than the American citizen spouse, but sometimes savvier than the officials, you know, placed in a position to manage the case.
My recollection was you wound up getting arrested, didn't you?
I did. And now that was through family court in my effort to protect my children from the threat of international abduction. And I was a quick study on both issues, and I learned that the State Department offered no safeguards to protect my children from not only being taken, but then having to rely on the Hague Convention to get them back. It was just...
We've been seeing a number of these cases play out. There was a guy whose kids that went, I think, to Latin America. There was another case that I think involved a European country. We
right.
see these from time to time pop up on the radar scope where the spouse abducts the child under the guise of, oh, we're going on vacation, and they leave the country without the knowledge or the authority of the spouse that they're no longer living with.
Right, and there are some provisions now in place. At that time, I was relying not only on the Hague Convention on the back end. My children at that time were 3. And the best advice given to me by the State Department and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which were the only go-to agencies handling anything to do with abduction, was that I should educate my 3-year-olds, take them to the airport, Logan Airport at that time, and teach them how to identify an authority figure so that if they found themselves there with their dad, they would know who to go to and, more importantly, what to say. And I thought my 3-year-olds are going to thwart their own abduction, and I that wasn't a risk that I was willing to take. And I can't imagine, frankly, any parent taking that kind of a risk with their children. That's crazy. Yeah.
Wow. So, how old are your kids now?
They're 17.
Thank God the storm has passed.
Right. That's right. The storm has passed. But we paid a heavy price, and
let me ask you a question, because here's the bottom line. There is a provision in the law that says they have to renew the Violence Against Women's Act. And, you know, on my website, and if you go to my website, by the way, folks, michaelcutler.net, and I also write extensively for a wonderful organization called Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website's capsweb.org. And to put in a quick plug for them, I was just out in California with the folks from CAPS. They do an amazing job of educating as many people as possible as to the way that we need to have our immigration laws enforced to protect American jobs and to restore some sanity to the immigration system. And their website, again, capsweb.org. My website is michaelcutler.net. And I know that there's also a website that you're familiar with that involves spousal abuse. Do you recall that website off the top?
Well, there's several. Which one, Michael?
Well, I know that you've been quoted in a couple of these. What would you consider to be the two best that our listeners can go to?
Well, I think probably going to the Senate Judiciary Committee website,
okay.
And you can read the testimony online. I don't know if the video link for C-SPAN is still available. I know
it is. It is. I actually clicked on it, and it started to come up. And that's actually on my website. I did include that in the email I sent out, so I'm sure that will be on my website.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not as rare a crisis as you might imagine, folks. I mean, this is a real problem. And I know that they're coming up now with a renewal on the law. Now, where do we stand with the renewal to prevent this sort of thing from happening to more American citizens and resident aliens?
Well, unfortunately, during the hearing, there was a representative from GAO, and we really need, as Senator Grassley has stated, we really need some hard, fast figures. There are a lot of cases out there, and without, you know, true numbers, I think we need statistics, right? So we need somebody following this. However,
right.
It's unfortunate that S-1925, Senator Leahy's bill, is void of any language regarding immigration fraud.
S-1925?
VAWA. Yes.
Okay. And that would extend VAWA for how long?
Well, from what I understand, VAWA will be funded regardless. So the funding continues, but we're just working toward comprehensive provisions that maintain the integrity of VAWA. And I think it's important to point out that just as an aside, my husband at the time, who claimed to have been a battered and abused spouse under VAWA to garner a green card, then served a year on probation for assault and battery in a case
against
unrelated
whom?
To ours. Well, in a case unrelated to ours.
Okay.
So, you know, down the road, he had an altercation with someone and wound up on probation for a year for assault and battery, which I think is beyond ironic. I don't quite know how to articulate that. And from what I understand, Michael, shouldn't that have gone on to back to what is now a USCIS agent, rather than anybody at the Vermont Service Center? That would have been reported to immigration officials.
Well, you know, I really have a problem with the way they do these remote adjudications where they don't even get to interview people most of the time. You know, one of the things people don't understand is when they talk about a massive amnesty program, whether it's comprehensive immigration reform or the DREAM Act, we are talking potentially about tens of millions of aliens. And they're not doing face-to-face interviews as a matter of routine in so many cases today. So what we're really saying is we would be giving millions of aliens, if our country is willing to, well, I know it's certainly, there are politicians that are certainly willing to betray American citizens. They do it every day of the week and twice on Sunday, as they say. But this would be such a betrayal because there would be no face-to-face interviews for the most part. They would be making decisions based on pieces of paper, and they'd make a decision within a couple of minutes. You know, we have all but dismantled America's borders, and this at a time when our borders have never been more important to us. If you look at the violence in Mexico, and, you know, it's ironic. The Mexican government screams bloody murder. Anytime there's any intimation at all about America securing its border, you know, the immediate knee-jerk response is the Mexican government jumps up and down and goes crazy. Do you know they've actually built a fence to separate Mexico from Guatemala? It's astonishing the duplicity that's involved with our Congress. Chuck Grassley, I have to tell you, is one of the few heroes on Capitol Hill. There are a couple of members of Congress who are gifts to our country. Chuck Grassley, Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, Congressman Steve King of Iowa, Congressman Lou Barletta of Pennsylvania. These guys really stand for something, and they stand for their constituents and for our country and our citizens. Because Grassley has been the guy who's been sounding the alarm about Fast and Furious. Pardon me, he's been sounding the alarm about immigration fraud. And I don't know if you saw where he issued a video today where he demands that there be integrity to this idea of the H-1B visas, the visas for the high-tech workers.
Mm-hmm.
It's remarkable that Grassley leads the charge. And I wish more senators would use him as a role model. I think he's done a phenomenal job of highlighting this problem with VAWA and highlighting all these other problems and making certain that there's real oversight in the Congress. Because, you know, that's really the job of Congress, is to exercise oversight over the executive branch. And this executive branch under this president has run roughshod over so many laws and regulations. De facto, we have an amnesty program. You know, we were talking off the air, as you might expect, folks, and Julie has become a friend of mine. The laws of nature are inexorable. And what that means is there's no gravity police. There's no, you know, law enforcement folks out there with a speed gun to measure the speed of light. Those laws are immutable. Gravity will always be gravity. The speed of light will be the speed of light. It has nothing to do with human intervention. But the laws of the human species really don't matter if they're not enforced. It's kind of like saying if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to hear it, the question isn't if it makes a sound. The question is, does it matter? So, you know, Congress can pass all the laws they want, and they know that that's what Leahy falls back on. Oh, there are provisions in the law that say if you commit fraud, then, you know, things will happen. But if the fraud goes uninvestigated and consequently undetected, does it matter if there are provisions in the law to address the fraud? See, at the end of the day, laws only matter if they are enforced, and that requires the manpower. And now we go back to the same old problem. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has about 7,000 special agents. Over half of them are doing customs work. So now we're down to maybe 3,000 special agents. Let's be optimistic and say 4,000. God knows. The service centers around the country process an estimated 6 to 7 million applications for a wide variety of benefits. On this coming February, February the 15th, I think it's Wednesday, there's going to be a hearing before the House Immigration Subcommittee about how the adjudications officers in California were being ordered. And this was, you know, an investigation launched, initiated by Chuck Grassley, once again, Senator Grassley of Iowa, leading the charge. And they came to understand that the agents or the examiners, the adjudications officers working at the service center in California, were told that no matter what they did, their goal was to get to yes, to approve applications for residency, approve applications for citizenship. Now, in fact, this is a huge problem, because what the 9/11 Commission found out was that it was through immigration fraud and visa fraud that the terrorists were able to enter our country and embed themselves. And not only the terrorists of 9/11, but the 9/11 Commission was able to identify 94 terrorists prior to 9/11 that had used visa fraud or benefit fraud in order to enter the United States and embed themselves in our country. In fact, the very first hearing that I ever did was for Lamar Smith, and back then it was Henry Hyde, who was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and the focus of that hearing was visa fraud and benefit fraud based on the two terrorist attacks of 1993. So we know that this represents a threat to national security, and yet there are very few agents who are actually out there making certain that there's any integrity whatsoever to the system by which more than 1.1 million aliens are granted lawful immigrant status each and every year, placing them immediately on the pathway to United States citizenship. 1.1 million plus applications are approved each and every year, and there's precious integrity to that whole process. This is why we are so much at risk. And, you know, it's funny because I had met Mike Chertoff when Michael Chertoff, former Secretary of Homeland Security, went to Chapman Law School, where we both were participating in panel discussions. And when we sat in the limo on the way from the Nixon Library to the hotel, it was probably the longest 40 or 45 minutes in Chertoff's life, we had a heated discussion about immigration. And he told me we didn't have the money to hire more agents for ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. But you know what's incredible? Guess how many people work for the TSA? Over 60,000. Over 60,000 employees of TSA, and that does not include the private contractors who augment those 60,000 people who work primarily at airports. You know, there's the old saying, if there's a will, there's a way. Our country lacks the will because there is an agenda in place, folks, to make minimal distinction between what it is to be a United States citizen, a lawful immigrant, or an illegal alien. And if you listen to the rhetoric of this administration, and if you listen to politicians from both sides of the aisle, you would think that enforcing the immigration laws is a bizarre idea, when in point of fact, those laws are designed to protect us all, protect us from aliens whose presence would be harmful, protect us from aliens who would take the jobs of Americans. We're getting hammered 8 ways from Sunday because we're not securing the borders, because the immigration system lacks integrity. What you ran into, Julie, in my judgment, and you know I was an adjudications officer for one of the 30 years that I served for the INS, and I spent a bunch of years as an agent investigating marriage fraud and other kinds of immigration benefit fraud. There is so little integrity to that process, and when you add VAWA to the mix, what we wind up with is a situation where we create incentives for aliens to lie about spousal abuse, which gets the American citizen spouse into a world of problems with the criminal justice system, potentially, and rewards the alien with a green card.
Well, and you're right. And if I could speak to a point you made earlier about about an officer making a studying a case just based on allegations and paper, and what I learned in my case, once it went to trial, I was in communication with the trial attorneys for INS. They were on the phone with me on a regular basis and asking me to provide information and keeping me abreast of what was happening in that case. But the moment that he filed a self-petition as a battered and abused spouse, they would no longer take my calls, nor were they permitted to contact me. And what I learned is that the moment an immigrant spouse files that VAWA claim, they're protected by the federal government. And there is no communication, not only between immigration and the American named in the claim, but between the immigration agent and the VAWA adjudicators.
I got a better one for you. You ready for this one?
I'm sitting down.
I found out from a gentleman who I hope will be on my program next week, Don Crescetti, that there's no communication between those adjudicators and the FBI. So even if information develops that involves national security, by law they're forbidden from discussing it with the FBI. Can you imagine that?
No. I mean, it just it doesn't make sense.
Do you know that in the amnesty of 1986, there was a red sheet that was placed on top of the application for amnesty? Do you know that under the law, and they tried to do it again with the with this insane comprehensive immigration reform business, we were not allowed to provide anything under that red sheet to any other agency. I was up at the Drug Task Force, and I was approached by a couple of FBI agents and a couple of New York City police detectives, and they said, Mike, do you have a file on a particular individual? I said, yeah, I do. They said, we need to find him. We believe he's been involved in a couple of homicides. I had photographs. I had an address. I had a treasure trove of information. Do you know I was not by law permitted to share that with him? If I did, not only would I have lost my job, but I could have been criminally prosecuted.
It just doesn't make sense.
Well, because we are protecting illegal aliens more than we protect our own citizens. Now, I want you to understand that if an alien comes into the country legally, does everything by the law, everything by the numbers, and is then accused of a crime, I could go to jail for not sharing that information with other law enforcement agencies, for obstructing them and going after a bad guy. But if the bad guy enters the United States by violating our borders and violating the laws, he gets special protection under the law that was created in 1986 under the Reagan administration. We were not allowed to share the information. They had to go get a court order. It was amazing what they did. And they were trying to recreate it in the amnesty that was known as comprehensive immigration reform. Mm-hmm. Why would you shield an illegal alien from law enforcement even if the person is believed to pose a threat to national security or criminal justice?
Mm-hmm.
What message are we sending to the people around the world? You know, I always like to point out that we get one opportunity for a first impression. The first set of laws that aliens seeking to enter the United States are likely to encounter are our immigration laws. Today, folks, we are sending a very clear message to criminals and terrorists throughout the world. If you come to the United States and you run our borders and you violate our laws and you steal somebody's identity, and identity theft, by the way, is one of the fastest growing white collar crimes in America. It claims millions of victims and turns people's lives upside down and inside out. If you do all that, not only won't you be punished, we're going to reward you for it. Now, think about that. When the President of the United States says that if you are here illegally, we will not arrest you unless you've been convicted, not charged, but convicted of felonies. So that they've even changed the detainer form. I haven't seen the new form. I want to get my hands on one because I used to lodge a detainer. And for those of you not familiar with it, a detainer is a form that tells another agency, this guy that you have in your custody is somebody that we at Immigration want. You are not to release him to the street. You're to give him to us. Let us know when you're going to release him. They apparently are changing the wording on it, saying that, well, this guy is being held for a trial as an illegal alien. But if he's acquitted, even though he still remains illegally present, we don't want to know when you release him. We just want you to turn him loose onto the street. So if you're a terrorist, all you have to do is come to America, make sure you don't get arrested, and it doesn't matter if you run our borders. It doesn't matter if you parachute into the middle of America from an airplane. Doesn't matter how you get here. Doesn't matter what immigration laws you violate. As long as you don't have convictions for felonies, immigration will ignore you. And if we're contacted about you, we'll probably give you employment authorization. I think Rod Serling has written the script. How does that make you feel?
Vulnerable.
How outrageous is this?
Yeah.
See, the American people need to understand that the immigration laws are so vital. Somebody emailed me because I just wrote about the threat posed by Iran. And he said, oh, Mr. Cutler, if we get attacked by Iranian sleeper agents, immigration law will be the least concern to the average American. And I emailed him material about the nexus between immigration and 9/11. And in fact, there's a report, the 9/11 Commission report, and I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. There was also the monographs on terrorist travel relating to 9/11. If you look at it, you realize that the essential issue for the terrorists who attacked us on September the 11th, 2001, was their ability to easily enter our country and take on multiple false identities and move easily among us. And we're doing nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing, to address that vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And we're doing nothing to protect people like you who get caught up in this web of deceit by aliens who intend to game the immigration system and wreak havoc on the lives of American citizens who unfortunately get snared in their web of deceit and guile.
Well, and you're right. There are no penalties in place for filing false allegations of abuse.
Well, there are on the state level where they could certainly say, well, you filed a false police report, but lots of luck trying to prove it.
Oh, well, as far as the immigration process goes, though, there really is no standard for proof.
Right.
It's just it travels a different road it's different from the private sector. It's
right.
different from a domestic issue
mm-hmm.
that would be handled by the police department. Once the federal government is involved, that immigrant is afforded a level of protection that you or I wouldn't find in the
or
private
a lawful
sector.
Immigrant wouldn't find.
Right.
Abide by the law and you're screwed. That's the bottom line. That's the message we're sending. Isn't that a wonderful message to tell the people that only an idiot would follow the law?
And do you know what is additionally required? An affidavit, a self-petition affidavit by the immigrant's spouse. So when I filed the Freedom of Information Act and I received the filing, the immigration file, and the affidavit, it was if only the original agent handling our case had been allowed to participate in the investigation, you and I wouldn't be on the phone. I wouldn't know you. I would know you from watching you on television
and
reading your articles and listening to you on the radio. But otherwise, you and I would not know
right.
each other. But because that agent was prohibited from participating in the investigation, it's a whole new ballgame.
You know, it's funny what you just said, because I've said that to people that I know because of the attacks of 9/11, people who lost loved ones, and I've said that to them. If the Clinton administration had been willing to learn the lessons that the two terrorist attacks committed on our country in 1993, if they were willing to learn those lessons and act appropriately, there would be no way for me to have known those people who lost loved ones on 9/11, because 9/11 could not have happened. It's sobering, and it's infuriating to think that our country is weakening itself and American lives are being lost routinely because the immigration anarchists who stand to make a ton of profit off of this massive influx of aliens into our country are getting what they want. In fact, there's an organization, Social Contract. They publish a quarterly magazine. I'm proud that for the last two magazines I had articles published. There's a new one coming out in the spring edition, and it's going to be looking at the profiteers of immigration. I wrote a very lengthy, extensive article for them, and I named my article Immigration, the Modern Day Gold Rush. When you understand, pardon me, how many people are profiteering off of this massive influx of aliens into our country, you know, it's easy to make the accusation, oh, you don't like people from other countries. Well, you know, my mother was from another country. My mom came to America ahead of the Holocaust from Poland. If America had not admitted her, she wouldn't have survived. I wouldn't have been born because she was a teenage girl when she came here. So, again, there would be another reason why you and I would never have met. So it's not about being opposed to immigrants. It's about making certain that we don't permit people into our country who are going to do harm to us one way or the other. And somehow looking out for our fellow Americans is now seen as some kind of a horrendous thing. To say, gee whiz, I want to make sure that American kids don't go to bed hungry at night, that makes me evil. To say I don't want to see Americans of every race, religion, or ethnicity lose their jobs, that makes me a terrible person. You know, we're so screwed up here, folks, I got to tell you. And here's the point, and the reason that I had Julie on today, because I think her story is a compelling story. But I want you to understand that the immigration laws that are supposed to protect America and Americans are not doing its job. And the solution to it isn't just to say, boy, that was a terrible story. The solution is that all of us need to demand of those who profess to represent us in the halls of Congress. Pardon me, boy, I've got to frog that won't go away today. Kermit has set up shop. We need to get a hold of our folks on the city level, the state level, and certainly the federal level, and make certain that they understand why we have immigration laws. When a city declares itself to be a sanctuary and says, oh, the immigration laws aren't important, those immigration laws are among the most important because they're supposed to keep the people out who would pose a threat to our safety, to our well-being, to our ability to be successful Americans. This isn't about bigotry. It's not about race. It's not about religion. If it was, I couldn't enforce those laws. My family was decimated in the Holocaust. The immigration laws are as American as apple pie. And it's a betrayal of America and Americans to not enforce those laws. When you have people running the border, there is no way of knowing why they're doing it. There's no record of their entry, and we don't know if they're simply desperate for a job or if they've committed a heinous crime in their home country and they are on the run. We don't know if they're part of a criminal or a terrorist organization. We know nothing about them. Think of the way we're all scrutinized today when we want to get a job. Think of how we're scrutinized when we want to get a mortgage. Think of how we're scrutinized if we want to get a car loan. Part of the reason the economy melted down was because banks were willing to accept Mexican matricula cards even after a guy by the name of Steve McGraw testified in 2003 before the Immigration Subcommittee that Mexican matricula cards were a threat to national security because they're not reliable ID. By the way, Stephen McGraw at the time held the position of assistant director for the FBI Division of Intelligence. He was the chief intelligence officer for the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and the Treasury Department basically told the banks, you can ignore the FBI. That is how deeply screwed up this country is where the issue of immigration and borders is concerned. We, the people, have definitely got to get our voices heard. We've got to take these horror stories, like Julie's story that we've been talking about this evening. We have to understand how this is a betrayal of every American, how it's a betrayal of every lawful immigrant who abided by the laws and played by not only the rule of law, but by the intent of the law to make sure there's integrity to the process by which we admit aliens into the United States. That's what's needed. Sitting home and talking about this to your friends, well, that's fine, but at the end of the day, what you need to do is get involved with your political representatives and make sure they hear from you. The election is coming up. It's coming up in November. It's rushing at us like a train. And it's vital, absolutely vital, that we confront the politicians. I think of that woman who stood up and said to the president, my husband is an out-of-work engineer and he can't get a job. I suspect it was not what Barack Obama wanted to hear. But I will tell you, Chuck Grassley issued a video statement supporting H-1B workers, supporting Americans, rather, who are being supplanted by the H-1B visa holders. This, again, is a betrayal of the American worker. We are being betrayed on so many levels by our very own government. You know, Lincoln said this is supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I don't think so much at this point when you can consider what happened to Julie, when you consider what happens to the engineers and scientists who got their educations in America and wind up, in essence, with a student loan that looks more like a mortgage payment than a student loan payment. What's the point to being educated if you can't get a job and support yourself and your family? That was the whole idea to the American dream. Get the education. Be successful. Today we're being told the opposite. We're being told that Americans are too lazy to do the hard work and too stupid to do the high-tech work. And believe it or not, the people saying this are the people that we are dumb enough to elect. So maybe they're right. Maybe we are too dumb. Because these are our alleged representatives. Do you think they're really representing us? Do you feel represented, Julie, when you consider what you've been through?
No, and it took me a long time to find the right people in Washington, D.C. who were willing to take this on. And I didn't find them in my own state. I had
then
to go
that was
elsewhere.
Where?
I'm in Indiana.
And, that's pathetic.
Yeah, I spent nearly 2 years spinning my wheels with one particular congressman's office and finally remembered I had an old friend who had a friend in Washington. And, you know, you reach a point where as I started to do research and reach out, there just was no stone that I could leave unturned. So I'd get on the phone and make a phone call, and sometimes I'd reach a dead end, and sometimes I wouldn't. And it paid off in the end. And I reached the right people. And there are people in Washington, like Senator Grassley, who are interested in this issue, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. Well, he did an amazing service to you, but to our country as well. And that's why your story is so compelling. It's an important story in your personal life, but it's an important story for all Americans. Because I think what happened to you is emblematic of what's happening to our country where our government is concerned. You know, a government is supposed to be an advocate for its own citizens. That's the purpose of a government. You know, when I was on Neil Cavuto's program a couple of weeks ago, I said, you know, wouldn't it be nice if our elected representatives said a pledge of allegiance to their constituents the way that we, the people, say a pledge of allegiance to our flag and to our country?
Mm-hmm.
It seems as though these people in Washington have forgotten who they're supposed to be representing. You certainly
mm-hmm.
couldn't feel very well represented when this whole thing started to play out.
Mm-hmm. No, and it's funny because originally you referred to everyone as knowing much more about the issues than you do. And then what you learn is that that's not always the case. And
right.
sometimes they're more than willing to listen to you and they want to know what happened. And other times they aren't interested. And you just, you can't take it personally. I learned to... fairly early on, just to keep moving. And it's disappointing, though, I have to say. And you learn a lot in the process, and it's eye-opening.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I can certainly see where it was, you know, and speaking with you, I will tell you, I found it rattled me, and it was your life, not my life, we were discussing, because it's kind of a nightmare. We're supposed to expect that our government will look out for our best interests. And this is why, if members of Congress, if there's anybody out there listening, if you wonder why your approval rating is in the toilet, this is why. Because at the end of the day, Americans want to look to you guys and say, well, you're the guy that I can go to, and you're the guy that I could count on to protect me, protect my family. 9/11 represented a complete failure of the federal government to learn the lessons we should have learned when we were attacked not once but twice in 1993. And just to rerun this, in January of 93, a guy by the name of Amir Khansi, a citizen of Pakistan, had been granted political asylum even though he lied through his teeth on his application, got political asylum, and then stood outside the CIA headquarters in Virginia with an AK-47 that cold January morning and opened fire on the cars being driven into the compound by CIA officers. When the smoke cleared, two CIA officers were dead and three were wounded. He fled the country because that's what transnational criminals and international terrorists can do. They have an escape hatch they can disappear through. He fled the country. But because of the nature of the crime, our guys went looking for him, and they found him. And they dragged him back here, probably kicking and screaming, put him on trial, found him guilty of murder, and he was executed. But the people he killed remained dead. The people that he wounded remained wounded. And just 1 month after his violent attack at the CIA, we had the first attack at the World Trade Center. And the people involved in that, again, Middle Eastern men who had gamed the visa process, lied on applications for amnesty. Chuck Schumer used to be my congressman, and I like to tell people Chuck was never my representative. I met with him in 1985. I literally stepped away from my first wife, who was dying of cancer, and she knew how important this meeting was. And I was in not a great state of mind, and I walked into his office determined to block his efforts to be an architect of agricultural amnesty, and he didn't want to hear anything about it. When I walked in, instead of asking me what was on my mind, he said to me, let me tell you what I know about immigration. And I wanted to say to this character, I didn't come here to listen to you lecture me. I came here to provide you with insight as an agent. And I warned him that if, in fact, he enacted that agricultural provision of the amnesty of 86, that fraud would be so rampant that if my son, who at the time was a year old, became an agent, that he would be guaranteeing my son job security. Unfortunately, I was more correct than I thought. And in fact, there was a guy by the name of Mahmoud Abu Alima who got agricultural amnesty, and the only thing this thug ever planted was a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center that almost brought that whole complex down sideways. As it was, six people were killed, hundreds, perhaps thousands injured, and $500 million in damages were inflicted by a bunch of individuals who had no right to be here, who were easily able to game the immigration system to accomplish their goal. So you would have thought that we would have looked at that and said, wow, this system is leaking like a sieve. We got to fix it. And in fact, 97, as I pointed out earlier, I did my first hearing about visa fraud, benefit fraud, because of those attacks. And the Clinton administration did nothing. In fact, they did worse than nothing. They implemented Citizenship USA, where they ran over 1 million applications for citizenship through the system. And it turned out, according to the GAO, that thousands of those who were granted citizenship, the highest honor a nation could bestow upon an alien, thousands probably should have been deported.
Mm-hmm.
This immigration system does not serve the American people, but it does serve the corporations. It does serve the banks. It does serve the immigration lawyers. It does serve the Chamber of Commerce. It does serve the travel, hospitality, and manufacturing industries. And in fact, those last three or four bonded together to form an outfit called the Discover America Partnership. Of course, I guess they have forgotten that Al-Qaeda and other thugs around the world have already discovered America. So this push for globalism to drive down wages and encourage tourism so that the people can profit at the top of the food chain is starving the average American who just wants to pay his mortgage bill, put his kids through school, and live out his life and take care of his family. We're destroying the middle class so that the folks at the top of the food chain can get wealthier. And the folks that are screaming about, you know, Occupy Wall Street, they should be looking at the immigration laws and what's happening with them. When Bill Maher can stand there and say, this is about people with brown skin, I'd like to unscrew his head. This isn't about any color of skin. This is about America and America's middle class and America's citizens. Brown skin, black skin, white skin, polka dot skin. I don't care about skin, race, or religion, nor do the laws. These are the laws that are supposed to protect America and America's middle class. We are devouring the middle class. It won't be long before you will be able to see an exhibit at the Museum of Natural History next to the dinosaur cage. You'll have an image of America's middle class that had just gone extinct. And it's being driven extinct by the globalists. So if people want to be angry, they need to listen to what happened to you, Julie. They need to look at what happened on 9/11. They need to look at what happened in 1993. And they need to look at what's happening with the employment of Americans today. This is a betrayal of the American dream. This is a betrayal of the citizens of our great nation. And it's time that the American people stood up and said no more. No more. You know, in that movie Network, when he stands up and says, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. This is that moment for America today. We should all be mad as hell and not be willing to take it anymore. And that means that we need to speak out. We need to reach our elected representatives, and the message needs to be very clear. Not just say to them, oh, I don't like what you're doing, because they don't care whether you like it or not. They're getting their pockets lined from every direction possible. You know, I wasn't allowed to take a cup of coffee as an agent, and these guys boast about the millions they collect in campaign contributions. So what you need to tell them to get their attention is something a little bit more persuasive. My suggestion, call them up and say, listen, you keep doing this, not only won't I vote for you, but I will work tirelessly to get anybody, and I mean anybody, elected in place of you. I don't care if the guy has three eyes and five heads. I'm going to make sure that you are no longer in Congress. You are no longer in the Senate. That's the message that they will listen to, folks. You know, I so much appreciate you being on with me, Julie. We've run a little bit long.
Well, I appreciate your time and the opportunity to address this. So thank you, Michael.
Julie, I thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I'll speak with you afterwards. But I just want to end the program tonight by thanking everybody for joining us. I hope that there's a lesson to be taken away from what Julie went through. Besides the fact that this is a true horror story, understand that it played out and it was aided and abetted by the laws of our own government and by the failures of our government to properly protect its own citizens. Because at the end of the day, a relationship has to be two-sided or it's not a relationship. At the end of the day, as much as we're supposed to say a pledge of allegiance to our country, and we do, our country has to be looking out for us. And unfortunately, it's not happening all that often any longer. We, the people, can make the changes. Folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. This is something I keep saying, and I will continue to say. It's about being involved. It's about making our voices heard. It's about making certain that the politicians who allege to represent us are actually representing us. And, you know, if you look at Chuck Grassley, if you look at how he stepped up to the plate in Julie's case, he's done it in other cases as well, that's an example of what leadership and representation is about. You can find it with Jeff Sessions. You can find it with Steve King. You can find it with Lou Barletta. These are great political leaders. And leadership requires that they step up to the plate. Chuck Grassley did an amazing job here. It's a wonderful thing to work with his staff members and the staff members of the other folks that I've mentioned. But folks, please, I ask you to do your share. Educate yourself on the issues, get involved, and please remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. I wish you all a great weekend. Look forward to having you back next week when I hope to have a very interesting guest on the program. We're working out the arrangements now. I'll be sending out an email shortly so that you'll know who we're going to have on. But in the meanwhile, please go to my website, michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization. Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend.